now everybody wants a piece of the market.
Oh my God, that is funny!
I don't remember asking you a thing.
I'm funny how? I mean funny like I'm a clown, I amuse you?
With all due respect, what the are you talking about?
Oh, I'm sorry, did I break your concentration?
What the so funny about me? Tell me what's funny.
You represent the idiocy of today.
I did not know that.
English, motherfucker, do you speak it?
Are you listening to me?
Now's my shit together, is my shit together.
Nice personality combination, hostile and intolerant.
So that's it then. No one else really knows anything.
Christian Yelich. Here it is. Yelich sends one to right center and deep. Get up! Get up! Get out of here and gone for Yelich. He has tied the game with a booming home run. He got it all. Tied up 4-4 on a big home run.
Stocks. Jocks.
Jocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Back Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom. I'm Jim Lawler on the board. S&P futures up 56. NASDAQ futures up 650. Got some numbers going there. With the this is all because of Micron earnings. Well, actually not Micron earnings. Micron projection, which is kind of bizarre. But do we have Professor Lou?
We should.
Lou, are you with us? I don't hear him. Maybe unmute thyself.
Yes, he is on mute.
Micron stock is up 700% over the past year, lifting the company's market cap to $1 trillion. Now that's a number. Jimmy, you got to wiggle something over there because I'm only hearing one headphone. So okay. Somehow the stereo is off or something. But
no, the stereo is on. It's
well, it ain't even working. But That's another story. So we have the market has been...
Let's see if Lou is on.
The market has been crazily up and down the last few days. The NASDAQ futures had 200-300-point moves yesterday before the Micron thing even happened, because it happened right after the close. So you're seeing these futures and the cash is going to be a little weird, because the futures moved after the close, and the cash obviously did not. So... You know, that's an issue. It's an issue in trying to keep them together, but obviously they end up in the same place. But I've got Micron is now up $191. It's trading $1,241. Now, at $1,200, I added a 25 times revenue. Now, these guys are saying that the revenue is going to go up, but if it doubles, there's still 12 times revenue, which is a real lot. These CEOs have kind of ceased being CEOs, become kind of two big carny hucksters in a few cases. But what are you going to do with Lou here at some point?
I don't know. It says that he is on. Maybe we'll do a reboot. Hold on.
All right. The Cubs, Dansby Swanson, who had given up for dead as a hitter, he was hitting 180. He wasn't anywhere near the Mendoza line. All of a sudden yesterday, 11 RBIs in a doubleheader. The hapless Mets. Hopefully the Cubs can win one more today. I really don't mind seeing the Mets lose all that much. And the Bulls evidently had Bulls' story was they had a high first-round pick and two good second-round picks. They took the first-round pick. They immediately sold one of the second-round picks. That's always good news for somebody who's paying very high ticket prices.
Could you ask Lou to try to come back on? We're back on.
All right, still no Lou.
Zoom. We rebooted.
All right, well, when you get them, we get them. The other stocks I see up, Caterpillar is up 15. Got NVIDIA up 2, so they're back over 201. Some stocks were hit pretty good yesterday. Had a big down move, and this is, I don't know how troubling, but somewhat troubling, I think, in some areas. We've got the MicroStrategy. It's down to 95, but it's up a buck and a half this morning. It's down to $95. And the Bitcoin is... It's under 60,000, which is their lowest level since October of 2024. Now, it's back up this morning, $1,200, but those guys got a boatload of debt, supposedly, on this Bitcoin. And I've not been able to find out who exactly the debt's with, if it's just general people or if it's with a bank or who it is. So I think if Bitcoin pushes back down to 50, there's going to be some pressure somewhere on somebody. It's hard to determine where it is and where it isn't. But it definitely is I think that's something to watch. And how much to watch, I don't know. Let me check my email to see if Lou is saying something on our end.
It looks like he appears to be on.
I don't know. I hope he's not. Hope he wasn't lawyer napped on us. I don't see him saying that he's. I don't see him that he's in. I usually get a notification. So.
We did get a notification that he is in your Zoom meeting, and he appears on Zoom.
Well, why don't I? So all right, tell us what's going on with the soccer while we're waiting for Lou. Let me find him. He's always here. I don't want to see him out there in Colorado just hacking around.
Let's
with his Zoom.
Try one more time here.
I have you guys 5x5.
There you are.
Okay.
You unmuted thyself, or we unmuted you, or something. There you are.
Well, I couldn't hear anything.
We had to do a reboot on the Zoom.
We had to reboot the Zoom. I hate it when that happens.
Yeah, the infamous Zoom reboot. Well, good morning, gentlemen.
How are you?
We're good. I assume we'll cut all that previous stuff out.
What previous stuff?
The chat we just had.
I didn't have one with you. That must have been Jimmy.
Okay.
Whatever. We'll cut that out.
All right.
You weren't swearing at each other, were you?
No, we're good.
Right.
I was bemoaning the fact that I got up at 4:30 and was gonna miss the show.
Well, I wanted to talk to Jimmy for an hour, so I'm glad you're here. So there you are. Hey, what is the story with this kid that canceled the draft?
So this is a really interesting situation that isn't over yet, maybe. It depends how much money he has and how much he wants to pay. He wants to pay his lawyers, but here's what happened. I think the NFL is playing games, and it may yet have this all exposed, depending on how they want to push forward. But this kid is a gambler. He's a big-time gambler. He's an addictive gambler. He's whatever. But he bet on his own team. In 2023, the NFL modified its conduct policy, no objection from the union, modified its conduct policy to apply to people who were seeking to be NFL players. So pre-draft, pre-signing conduct can be considered for NFL discipline before you even become an employee. This is not unusual. A lot of companies look at this. I mean, most companies have a policy that they're not going to hire people who are convicted felons, for example, or people who are convicted of certain types of crimes. So this kid's got a gambling issue. He admits it. What he doesn't do is apologize. He says, yeah, I went to rehab for a month. But he doesn't apologize. He doesn't take ownership of it. He doesn't do anything else. On the other hand, when the NFL, when they were applying for the supplemental draft, and remember, the supplemental draft is discretionary. The NFL could say, we're going to have a discretionary draft, or it could decide, we're not going to have one this year. And so this kid applies for the supplemental draft. He apparently gives the NFL everything they asked for. They said, all right, you're going to apply. Here's what we need. We need, why you are applying, what your justification is, why you can't get into the regular draft system, et cetera, et cetera. And, why you're not going to be able to play football this year. supposedly they put in everything that the NFL asked for, and then the NFL, you know, and they did it within the deadline. The NFL then comes back and sends a letter saying, "You didn't do the following things. You didn't show remorse. You didn't give us an adequate explanation. And oh, by the way, you applied 3 days before the end of the deadline, and then expect us to consider this."
Yeah, well, that's what deadlines are for. If you meet the deadline,
that's exactly right. I mean, the dumbness of that statement. And every now and then, I look at the people that are that. I thought the NFL letter was okay, but that particular line, I was going, well, then if you're complaining about the fact that he applied before the deadline and it didn't give you enough time to assess this situation, then why are you calling it a deadline? Why not move it back? It's ridiculous. So anyway, he makes the application, and the NFL sends him a letter saying, "Listen, we don't like this whole situation." Basically, what it is it just said, we think you've got character problems. We don't think it's fixed, and we're not interested in getting into a circus if some team drafts you and you come on board. Now, his lawyer, who is a very experienced litigator that has had a lot of success, has said, "I'm going to take legal action against the NFL and the union." I'm pretty sure the union's looking around going, what did we do? This isn't our call. I think he's going to try to force the union, or he want the threat of legal action was to force the union to take a position to try to assist this kid in his application. But the guy's name is Sorsby, by the way. He's a quarterback. But I think this was an attempt to force the union to try to come on board for the kid. The union has done that for people who weren't drafted or who are not technically union members. It creates what I consider to be a conflict of interest with the union leadership for them to take on a non-member and try to promote him into this organization, because NFL clubs and employees are literally a zero-sum game. For every guy that comes into the league, somebody exits the league. And so the idea that they would be telling their membership, "Yeah, one of you's gonna, if we're successful in helping this kid, one of you's gone." I think that's a conflict of interest. I think the union, another can of worms. If I'm the union, I don't want to get into. But for the NFL, the NFL has not exactly been consistent in the guys that they've allowed to stay on, within the league in terms of conduct. I'll be interested to see what happens with this kid that's playing for the Detroit Lions right now, this cornerback who got arrested on federal kidnapping and armed robbery charges last night.
Is he a starter?
Yeah, I think
so. Well,
then
that makes, that's a big difference.
Well, it is a difference, you know, in terms of we look at this and say, you know what, maybe if this Sorsby dude was God's gift to quarterbacking, maybe the league would be willing to let him in, but he's not yet, and for whatever reason the league said we're not going to do this. Now, there is a line out there. It's a 2-year suspension, I think, for betting on your own team. I think that's the last precedent we have from the union or from the league. But if you're a gambling addict, and Kessler, the attorney, had some success with this at the state court level. So I think his claim will go something like this. This is an employment case. My guy has a recognized disability. That is a gambling addiction. The NFL is applying its supplemental draft policy in a way that discriminates against people with gambling addictions. Now, and so that's a violation of the Americans with Disabilities Act, because the NFL has let people in with conduct issues that were at least comparable, if not worse, in terms of, you know, violent crime and stuff like that.
Well, they must have had a few people who were in rehab for drugs and booze, too.
Oh, yeah. But they have a... If you're a union member, you can be in rehab for that stuff. Now, that argument might get you past a motion to dismiss in federal court. But I think the NFL's got a pretty good justification to say, look, this is an integrity of the game issue. We have never not suspended or refused to employ people who have bet on their own teams. And our gambling prohibition is absolute because it's an integrity of the game issue. And we can't, the term is accommodate, we can't accommodate somebody who's going to put the integrity of the game at issue. And we're not convinced this kid is fixed. We're not convinced he's going to be able to control himself. And the scope of the problem that this kid had, you know, this is not an occasional bet. He bet 9,000 times in the space of, I think, 2 years. And he set up a system that allowed him to circumvent gambling restrictions and circumvent the warning system that was set up to deal with people who might be addicts.
Do we know who he uses, the DraftKings or one of those guys?
No, I haven't seen that. He apparently did a lot of the betting through friends and family. And I'm going, if you're, of course, again, who knows?
What kind of friends and family is that?
Well, and that's, so that was my immediate reaction, was yours. But my thought was, well, we don't really know whether, you know, one hand knew what the other was doing. So maybe he placed three or four bets through a brother. But that's all he did. So, and the brother didn't know that the guy was placing bets with everybody else. Or maybe he did it through friends. You know, hey, I need you to put a bet for me out here. And he did it when he was under 21. So there's a technical criminal law violation there as well. But obviously he's got this issue. And the league said, A, you don't sound sorry. B, you circumvented when you got caught.
Hey, Ray Lewis wasn't sorry.
No. When you got caught, your reaction was not immediately to first of all, you didn't turn yourself in. Somebody else had to catch you. Your immediate reaction when you got caught was to file a lawsuit to circumvent the restriction. We don't like that. One of the things when I was an agent that I worked to impress upon my clients, some of whom were engaged in problematic conduct, was that, look, this is not Dragnet. You don't get the right to remain silent. You don't. If you don't talk, the NFL holds that against you. If you engage in legal action that the NFL leadership doesn't like threatening to sue them, they can cut you off, and they will. So he establishes a record that the NFL views as problematic. He bets on his own team, which is a nightmare. He does it apparently a lot. He doesn't turn himself in. When he gets caught, he puts on this show of, oh, I went to rehab, I'm all better. At the same time, suing the NC2A to force them to take him back. He creates all kinds of problems for his college athletic organization. And the NFL says, you know what? We got enough circuses running around in our own league right now. We don't need to invite some more monkeys, you know, to the circus. We have plenty of monkeys, you know, we have lots of circus shows. We don't need any more monkeys in this circus. You know, so take a year. You can enter the draft next year. And they effectively impose a 1 year suspension on him. Now, having said that,
No, he can't go sign with a team until he has to go through the draft next year. Well, that's kind of screwy.
It's funny,
you and I, we don't have different views of this, but you're an officer of the court, and you see the way things sort of are. And I, as you know, I sometimes I go to a beat of a different drummer. It strikes me in this country that, and people are getting sort of immune to it, that some people can defy the courts and do whatever they goddamn please, and other people can't. I am not convinced.
Well, the NFL's not defying anybody.
Sure they are.
Right now. No, they're not. No court has said he has to play NFL football.
Okay, but I'm saying they've essentially instituted a ban from their monopoly. But my point is, I'm not all that giddy about the fact that you can go to a rehab. I mean, let's say, for instance, PTI Securities, you know, we don't have anybody, but if we used to have, you know, 10, 12 people, we don't have as many anymore, because we don't do as much futures business, and we had a couple people die, that's a problem. If we had somebody who was just boozing all the time and showing up late, and we said, you know, we need you here all day. We need you here, guy. That's why we hired you. Oh, no, I'm going to rehab for 3 months. See you. And we have to follow all these rules whether we like them or not, right? And we're going to have to be paying somebody for a while, and maybe he gets fixed, or she, or maybe he doesn't. And it's going to be a pretty serious drain. We, at our size, has to actually follow the court. Now, if you follow this kid, and I'm with you, and it sounds to me like he's 9 miles of bad road, but the fact is, he does have a judge saying, you get to play college ball after 2-game suspension, and he was silent on the pro part, because you would think that it would sort of carry through, and yet both the colleges, who act like a monopoly, and the NFL, who absolutely convinced they're a monopoly, even though they're not, like baseball sort of is, they say, screw you. We're not paying attention to it. But I look at it and go, if it was my firm, I'd have to pay attention to it, yet they don't. Well, I have an issue with that. I mean, the White House the same way, the Senate's the same way, the city's the same way. I mean, the courts work for certain level of people like me and not for anybody else, it doesn't appear.
Well, okay, so we're a little ahead of the cart's a little ahead of the horse here. His lawyer has not filed a lawsuit against the NFL yet. He may, and he may approach it the way I just described. And if he does, the court may come in and say, okay, fine, we're gonna enjoin or we're gonna allow you to sue the NFL for a lost year of compensation. And you know, the argument, that's one argument. The second argument is the court could say, because this kid's going to ask for an injunction, he's going to ask the court to make the NFL hold a draft for him. And the court's going to say, the court might say, okay, because I believe that if you don't get to play next year, that's irreparable harm to you. I can make that argument. And so can you, pretty easily.
You better than me, yes.
But it's irreparable harm. It's a year out of, you know, your playing career is averaging 3 years. If you don't get to play a year, that's significant, and you can't get that back. Your loss of revenue is not adequate compensation. So the court says, fine, I'm gonna force the NFL to hold a supplemental draft. If that happens, the NFL is going to hold, they'll appeal, and they might get an appellate court to take it on an emergency basis. But otherwise, they're going to hold a supplemental draft, and somebody might take this kid. Now, would it surprise me if no NFL team drafted him, or if all of a sudden somebody said, okay, fine, I'll take a flyer on this kid, but he's going to be a seventh round pick. That's all any team is going to be willing to spend on him, a seventh round pick. So he gets less money than he's making in college.
Play in college now either.
He can't play in college, but
no, but that's another problem.
I'm just looking at it in terms of his evaluation. He gets less money than he's going to get in college. He's a seventh round pick, or no NFL team takes him, because again, the NFL clubs are looking at this going, you know, this guy's a Tim Tebow.
If every single person makes that decision on their own, I don't have a problem with it. If it, the whisper, what did the guy say in Casablanca? I put my fingers up to the air and when I go which way the wind blows. If all 30 teams put their finger up in the air, and the hurricane coming from the commissioner's offices don't sign this kid, I got a problem with that.
Well, and that will be the immediate supposition on his side.
Well, yeah.
that somebody said don't sign him. You'll play held to prove that.
Well, I mean, it's kind of when I started in the business, there were probably 12 clearing firms that would compete. They have people on the floor clear through those firms and go to the trading floor and trade, right? You know, 10, 12, 14, somewhere in there, some big, some small. Well, if you went to one and you didn't trade very much, but every morning you ate bagels and drank them out of beer in the afternoon, and they say, we don't want you anymore, that's their right to say, you know, your character, you're eating and drinking more than you're trading. But if all of a sudden every other firm said, oh, no, we all decided to not let you in, I've never run into that. And yet the NFL, people like you and I and Jimmy and the listeners, we're so used to these people acting like they are overlords and they're legitimate monopolies that we don't even it doesn't even faze us anymore, which kind of bothers me. I mean,
you remember that one of the sports writers for ESPN, I think it was Pablo Torres down in Miami, came up with emails showing collusive conduct regarding. I can't remember who it was, but showing that the NFL teams
were calling. Was it
Kaepernick? No, it wasn't Kaepernick. Nobody wanted to touch Kaepernick after the initial protest. No, it was somebody else, but it was collusive. I can't remember who it was. Anyway, it was collusion in terms of how they were going to deal with a certain player. I think this is a Within the operation of this group, I think that's eminently possible. But you're going to play hell to prove it. What I think is more likely is that the NFL, by sending that letter and basically sounding kind of stupid when they said, oh, you only gave us 3 days before the deadline to deal with this, I think they've opened the door up to what's called a retaliation claim. So this kid has said, I'm disabled. I filed a lawsuit to protect my rights because of my disability. And now the NFL has effectively said, listen, kid, you exerted your rights in a legal form. Because of that, we're not going to hire you.
We're not going to allow
you to compete for a position.
That's a problem.
It is a problem. It's a huge problem. And it goes to a truth that employment litigation people like me have tried to impress upon our clients. You may never be able to prove, and there may be no evidence because it didn't happen, that the NFL was going after you because of a gambling addiction or didn't want to hire you because of a gambling addiction. That may be a very difficult thing to show. But it's very easy, and juries don't have any trouble believing that if you come in and make a claim that that's what the NFL is doing, that the NFL said, okay, we're not dealing this guy's a problem child. We're not going to allow him to sign. That's retaliation, and the cases are legion, where juries have said, yeah, we don't believe the employer discriminated against so-and-so because of his race or his religion, but we absolutely believe that when he made a claim that that's what was going on, the employer decided not to hire him.
There was a firm that will go nameless in my business, but much more of an electronic firm. If I knew that, if I lobbed the name out there, everybody knows I was talking about. They had this lady, I don't think she was a minority. I don't know what, but she was their receptionist, and didn't show half the time, or wasn't nice to people. But evidently, when they interviewed her, the last three firms she was at, she like sued all of them for some sort of discrimination and won a couple of cases. These guys were absolutely terrified to not do everything she told them to do. I'm taking 8 weeks vacation. Okay, they were absolutely terrified because once they let her in the door, she was just a continual litigant to wherever everybody else she ever worked for.
Yep.
I mean, there's sort of people like that. I mean, you know, I mean, if people take advantage of my brother, this is a long time ago. He worked for, I believe it was GATX, and this is when he was an auditor for Arthur Young. He went out to some place and this company had just put through it's a big company, a big, you know, we like people to have babies kind of policy. So there was a lady who shows up, and, you know, I'm kind of all for people having families. I'm not. Well, she immediately gets pregnant, and she's off for, they had like a 6-month policy or something. So in the first 5 years, she had like 3 or 4 kids. She was gone 2 of the 5 years. And I'm like, okay, you have to have another person there just for when she's not around. At some point, you got to go, what are we doing here? I mean, for Pullman, they were a huge firm. Big firms can sort of get away with that, but little firms are just buried by these kind of things. And whenever I see the NFL or the NCAA saying, we're not going to pay attention to the court, it kind of ruffles me because I always got to pay attention to the court. Just saying.
Well, no, and this goes back to our longstanding discussion, Tom, about the reach of the regulatory state. The more protected categories you define, the more, quote, employment rights, unquote, that you give people, the higher the compliance cost, the higher the cost of monitoring all these rules to make sure you're not violating any. And frankly, the better it is for lawyers.
Yeah, well,
I mean, I this is my career field. I mean, people in my office, you know, it's one of the reasons I'm still fully employed at my age.
But how do you come to work every day with an employee that's suing you?
Yeah, I know. So there are a number of different ways of dealing with this, but I have lots of clients who have so typically what you get, you have a problem employee. Let's make it a she for purposes of this example, to go back to your comment. You have a problem employee. She's a nightmare. She's fomenting revolution in your workplace. She gossips, she tells lies about people, she cooks fish in the microwave. She
can you do that?
Totally,
can you do that?
yeah, that's a big one. She's just an obnoxious person. She's mean to people. She's sullen. She pushes. She shows up late. She leaves early. And so you're just sitting there going, God, I gotta get rid of her. But she's also a minority. She has a disability. She claims to have a disability. That she's got PTSD, which of course is almost unverifiable. She's got PTSD from a prior domestic assault, and she's female. So, you know, she's hitting for the trifecta, and you look at this. You're an employer, and you say, okay, fine, we're gonna move her out, but I can't just fire her, even though she's an at-will employee, because I'm gonna get sued for gender, race, and disability discrimination. So what I've got to do is put a record together of bad performance. And oh, by the way, if I start tracking everything she does, it means I have to have a similar level of standard tracking for all the other people in the office who are doing this but not doing it at the same level that she is. I just have to, I can't single her out for special monitoring without creating other problems. So you start counseling her, you start reprimanding her when she does stuff. She detects, because she's not stupid, she's just malignant, she detects that you're doing this, and she figures out that, hey, they're getting ready to tee me up for the long drive home. So what she does is she goes to the local civil rights organization, the Illinois Department of Human Rights or the Colorado Commission on Civil Rights, and she files a charge of discrimination. She goes, I'm being singled out because I'm female, because I'm a minority, because I'm disabled.
Obnoxious.
Take your pick.
Yeah.
I'm being singled out. She files the charge. Now, she's still working for you. She files the charge. That you get the charge, and you have to respond to it. Now, ultimately, you fire her. Her performance doesn't improve, and you fire her. She now turns around and says, I was fired because I was a minority, female, da-da-da, and in retaliation for filing this charge. And you've got some risk. It goes to, and this this whole anecdote that I just pitched out there is a reason why I tell my clients, if you've got somebody like this, and let's say they do something really dumb, like they drive the DWI, or they get arrested for DWI, or, and I've had a number of cases like this, they engage in some other awful behavior, like screaming obscenities at somebody in the workplace, or you find out that they've been padding their expense account, do not hesitate. Fire them immediately, because what you now have is a cause that is unrelated to their work performance or anything else. You've now got a standalone reason for termination that does not link back to the other bad behavior and everything else. They've just acted badly in a way that would get anybody else fired. So don't hesitate. Terminate them immediately, because now you have a good faith bona fide reason for firing them that will withstand legal scrutiny when it finally gets to a judge. And those kinds of situations happen all the time. And I counsel my clients, you've got this person you want to get rid of, and they serve up a reason to do it on a silver platter. Do not pass it up. It's an act of grace on their part.
Some of the stuff, Lou, a lot of things we talk about. I was jousting with Jimmy and a few other people about this, I won't say crazy rule in soccer, that if you cover your mouth when you're talking to somebody, it's a red card, because they think you're hiding a racial slur. Now, I don't think I've ever...
Is that a FIFA rule?
Oh, God, yeah. Absolutely. It's a new rule this year.
Yes, it is.
You know, but so I have this discussion with my nephew. He can be opinionated. Imagine that. He's like, well, everybody knew the rule, so what's the problem? And I said, Tim...
What if you're coughing?
Well,
how can they tell you're talking versus you're coughing?
I said, you know, I don't have an issue with people stopping, people cutting down on the racial slurs. I said, but, you know, I don't know, maybe it's because I spend my mornings talking to very intelligent people. Every time somebody says something, if you think about it for a second, you probably have five other questions you want to ask, right? All right, so my question now becomes, do we have enough cameras where everybody's mouth is on every camera that if he didn't cover his mouth, we'd know what he said? Do we have lip readers? Are they certified by Lip Readers Anonymous or something?
My understanding of the rule is that you don't have to prove that they actually said anything.
Right.
It's the covering of the mouth.
Right.
That's enough.
So then you get down to what's a racial slur. If both teams are black or both teams are white, you don't have to worry about it because they're the same race. I mean, to write this law up, it would take us a week, and how long would it be? 30 pages?
It's a ridiculous thing. So does that only apply to racial slurs, or if you call somebody gay or some other horrible term?
The rule is, they say if you cover your mouth, it's a red card, because evidently somebody covered their mouth last time and lobbed a racial slur at somebody. So what if you're running down the field and you don't cover your mouth and you lob one out at somebody? Is a lip read going to be on you? I mean, do they assume that everybody's mouth is on TV? I mean, obviously, when the coach in football covers up his mouth, he knows the camera's on him. You know, it's between.
Yeah, he's calling a play.
Yeah, so I get that part, but I mean, it just brings in an awful lot more.
Well,
does it mean that if France is playing Germany and everybody's white, there can't be a racial slur?
So what if it's an ethnic slur? I consider this to be a particularly European thing. Because they want to restrict free speech. The Europeans are huge on restricting free speech. They don't like it, and they don't have constitutional issues on it. So my immediate reaction, if I was a player, is that I would quietly set up a bunch of hand signs that meant racial slurs or
homosexual slurs,
and I would have these hand signs, and I would make these hand signs during the game. And if somebody said, "What is that? What are you doing?" I would say, "Well, that's my way of calling these people names."
By the way, that's been done.
Obviously. Oh, I know it has. I know it has. I would learn like American Sign Language if I was a European player, and I would for slurs and curses, and I would just throw those. I'd like gang signs. I would just throw that out at people, and then challenge FIFA to say, well, you can't make hand symbols, you know, you can't do that. And I would say, but nobody around me understands what I'm doing. This is my own personal thing. And let FIFA try to run with that. But when you open this door like this with stupid rules like this, it's a slippery slope for people like me and probably like you, Tom, yeah, and probably a bunch of other guys that I know who would say, you know, challenge authority or question authority. That's a stupid rule. Watch us push the edge of the envelope on this. That's ridiculous. Well, I didn't know that.
So the big rivalry on the Southwest.
And by the way, for any FIFA players who are listening, go for it. You know, I haven't copyrighted that idea. Take it and run with it.
The Southwest side, you know, a lot of guys played a lot of basketball. I mean, a couple of people went to the pros, but not very many. None of the Irish guys. A couple of Lithuanian guys did. But it was always this big rivalry between, like, the Mount Greenwood leagues, which are Irish, and the Marquette Park leagues, which are mostly Lithuanian. So this team from Mount Greenwood goes down and plays. I knew all these guys, right? They were better than me. I wasn't asked to play, but I get down there, and they get some questionable refereeing, and they get some catcalling out of the stands and stuff, and finally the Irish guys win by, I don't know, by a basket, and the crowd is kind of solid. One of the Irish guys turns around and says, "Take this, you Lugans," and moons the crowd. Now, where does that land? That's not a racial slur, but what is that?
Well, I mean that's
yeah. Nobody cares.
Moderately obscene content. I'm not saying you should that these guys should be flipping people off with their giving the middle finger to the people in the field. But if you took sign language, I mean the point. So the guy puts his hand up in front of his mouth and says, you know, something awful like pussy or gay or some other thing that we can't say on the air. Nobody hears him, and nobody can see what he's saying. So at that point, what are you trying to regulate?
Yeah, man, I don't know what they're trying to do. Are you dumb enough to assume that all black people like each other and all white people like each other? I mean, what are you doing with that? I mean,
it doesn't even. I mean, that's an even more nuanced analysis.
Yeah,
I would just say, okay, fine. If you're penalizing me for covering my mouth and saying things that nobody else can see or hear, then I'm going to adopt American Sign Language and start throwing out, you know, really bad things in ASL, and nobody else in the field is going to know what that is either, but I know what it is, and so I'm going to continue to say that guy's a blah blank, or this guy's a blank, or that ref is a
blank.
Nobody
knows what you're saying. It's sort of like if you decide you're not talking to your girlfriend, you got to call her up and tell her you're not talking, or you just
well,
not
well
talking?
I mean, this is the tree falls in the woods.
Yeah.
And which, by the way, can I tell? I don't even know if I should do this on the air or the podcast. Can I tell a Helen Keller joke?
Oh God, sure.
So this is an awful joke. I know it's awful. We'll just put it on this. But the joke is, if Helen Keller fell in the woods, would she make a noise?
God.
It's terrible, but this is the functional equivalent of that. You put your hand up. We presume it's not that you're communicating it to anybody, but we presume that you're thinking it.
Yeah.
Okay. You have no idea what I'm thinking, so I'm going to give you the functional equivalent of that, and I'm going to do it in a way that lets everybody know that, hey, I'm doing something awful. You just don't know what it is.
Well, one of the one of the amazing things about, you know, the few classes I had at University of Chicago in the economic world, not so much in the business world, but I hope that the same thing happens like in law school. But Milton Friedman was real big on this. The few tests he gave, he'd lob something out there really simple, where it's not your job to debate the idea or not. It was your job to follow it all the way through where it's liable to go. Which I don't see at any level of government right now, surely not in economics. and I'm, you know more about the law than me, but there's laws out there, the ramifications of which, I'll give you, an easy one. I mean, Pritzker, he labs out something. We talked about this 6 months ago. Some law comes out that for kids with, bad disabilities, being around animals is genuinely very helpful, which I absolutely agree with. I mean, you see these people that they take. I know my cousin's girlfriend used to take her dog to the children's hospital, and the dog was all trained for that, and it made the kids' night. I mean, I can't. I feel so much for that, it's scary. And yet, Pritzker puts through a thing, and actually, Tommy Shanahan, used to be on a show with us, son is autistic. And now he's like 24, but in Glen Ellen, they have a thing for, he goes, if I moved to Chicago, I'd have to make way more money. In Glen Ellen, they would come get the kid for 2-3 hours a day. This is all included. And every summer, they would take the kid for like a week to do something different where the parents could actually go on vacation. And I, you don't have any idea how much that helps unless one of your friends is one of these parents, right? Well, one of the times a kid, they all went to some horse farm or pony farm or something. Their horses were probably all 30 years old, who knows, but the kids had a terrific time. All they want to do is be around the animals. And I get that. But now Pritzker lobs a law out there that says, okay, we're going to provide this for kids in the state with autism. Well, one part of me says, what a great idea. And then I'm going, wait a minute. What if there's a kid on my block in Lincoln Park who's autistic? How the hell? There's nowhere near enough. I mean, we're losing stables, forever because of the cost of keeping a horse. How many places are set up for this? How the hell are you going to get the kid to where the place even is? You write the law, and all of a sudden you start asking these questions, and you go, Jay, what are you doing? This law makes no sense. I mean, I suppose if there's one of these centers someplace and there's a kid with autism a block away, it makes sense, but what are you doing? How does this even match up to anything, even though it's probably a good idea? I don't see people thinking anything through, Lou. I mean, is it just me, or am I just getting old and grumpy?
Oh, well, we're definitely getting old and grumpy, but I just go back to the idiocy of FIFA and what I consider to be a very European response, which is,
is FIFA European or are they South American? I don't know. Who are they?
Oh, no, they're European.
Oh, European, okay.
They're headquartered in Geneva. But this is a European response, and it's, the idea that you might, it's not just that we want to stop you from saying slurs to other people in the field, which they already banned. I mean that's fine. I think that's stupid, but that's what they're doing. But now we want to just stop you from thinking about it. I mean, think how Orwellian that is.
Yeah.
And the idea that you might be doing something that we don't like, even if it doesn't get communicated to anybody else, we know, we think that's what you're doing. And so we're going to stop you from even thinking about it. And so that's why, fine. You guys are going to penalize putting your hands to your mouth. Watch me make this ASL symbol, which nobody else on the field understands. And even you don't know what I'm saying. But I'm going to do it anyway because I'm going to convince you
There's signs about somebody being Italian, about it. I know all these signs.
That's right. That's right. There's a whole bunch of stuff that you could play with this. Anyway, that's a dumb. I'm glad we had this little discussion. That's a dumb rule. I'm going to have to look that. You have to look that up.
It's pretty simple. Hand over your mouth, you get a red card, right, Jimmy? There's not much to it.
That is correct.
So
my next thing, if you're coughing, what happens?
You're about the fourth person that's mentioned that to me. What if you're coughing? Evidently, you're supposed to cough on the guy so you don't cover your mouth. I don't know. Hey, just in terms of people listening to everybody, what at some point, I mean, I know a lot of this is every time you lob this one out there and people from the right and the left, the amount of, shall we say, credibility gap. Does anybody care if they tell the truth anymore? I mean, I don't know that it's gotten to the point now, Lou, when I, you know, I have two or three different feeds here from different brokerage firms, and every one of them's got, you know, a feed of like the news. And if you look at the news on the far left or the far right, I've gotten to the point now where I don't even read the summary. I just listen to, I mean, if Trump's talking or somebody's talking, I just listen to it and form my own opinion, which I know you're not supposed to do. You're supposed to see what your side thinks before you make your own decision.
Stay with the narrative.
Yeah, but I can't do that. But I'm sitting there, and all of a sudden somebody will say, more ships got through the strait the last 2 days. You'll listen to someone of, you know, Trump's, also used the term lackeys. Yeah, more ships got through in the last 2 days, and then somebody will send me something. Not somebody. Somebody on the show will send me something from a, you know, the World Shipping Digest something, and their number that got through the day before is like 5. I'm going, okay, there's a spread, 75-5. How does anybody figure out what the real number is today? Is anybody tell the truth?
In my business, we put you under oath, but even that doesn't work. I think the truth is, or something factual. Let's put it that way. Whether you're going to get the truth, I think, or a factual statement, is in direct relationship to how easily verifiable what you're saying is, and how many permutations or variations of the story that you're identifying as factual, how many permutations of that story are possible. And you see this, you see this in terms of military reporting all the time, because war is an imprecise undertaking. So because there's a push in our media narratives, because of our limited attention span, to simplify things as much as possible so that they can be reduced to short headlines or sound bites, you get variations of this factual story that, you know, are if there are lots of variations, your likelihood of getting an accurate factual story start going down dramatically, because people are trying to reduce things to lowest common denominator, lowest understandable or shortest understandable phrase, shortest understandable sentence, shortest understandable video. So when, again, it's the shortest understandable soundbite that's consistent with a narrative that you're trying to push, and so sometimes it's outright lies, like what happened during the Gaza invasion, where within the first week, there was an explosion in the parking lot of a hospital where some people had camped out, and it killed I don't know 30, 40 people. The explosion killed them because they were standing there. The first storyline that came out was that the Israelis had bombed the hospital, not the parking lot, the hospital. But the bomb fell close to the hospital, and so that narrative was sort of true, but a bunch of people were dead. So you start with that. There's the crater. There's a bunch of people dead. It's right next to a hospital. They bombed the hospital, and it was deliberate.
Well, you would think the
actual story, of course, was that a surface-to-air missile or a rocket that had been fired by Hamas misfired and went into the parking lot.
But it's still, on one hand, somebody killed some people that probably shouldn't have been killed. I don't really care if they're in the building or outside. They killed people they shouldn't have been killed, right?
Well, the question was, first outright lie was that it was an Israeli bomb that did it. That was an outright lie. But again, it was a permutation. It was a variation of the story. It was readily accessible, and it fit the narrative that these other people were trying to push. So you know, you start with they hit a hospital and killed a bunch of people, and it was deliberate. All right, A, they didn't hit a hospital; they hit a parking lot. B, the attack was not by an Israeli piece of Israeli ordnance; it was Hamas firing a rocket at Israel that misfired and went in there. It wasn't, the initial casualty reports were like 500 people, which, by the way, you would expect if you'd actually blown up a hospital. It wasn't 500 people. It was like 10% of that number, if that. Oh, but it takes time to peel those layers back.
Oh, without a doubt.
In the meantime, your short narrative is out there gaining traction.
Have you ever, whenever, it's been maybe two or three times in my life, that one of them was...
You know, by the way... We did this in spades during Vietnam.
Oh, sure.
And our
you do it all. I mean,
our own PR people are you know, U.S. military PR people are doing the same kind of thing.
Well, I mean, there's been these there's been a couple of times that I've been privy to information on a story. One was from the guy across the street. We used to live, blew away his mother and father with a shotgun. The other was when Johnson got arrested here, or the night he was got the drunk driving. And every time I was involved in something like, when I say involved, I knew the story. It never matched what was printed. I mean, it was absolutely scary. I mean, it almost seems like, in both cases, one person came out and covered the story, made some mistakes, and everybody else just read his story and plagiarized it for their paper. You know,
it was absolutely scary.
I mean, which is you know, nobody did their own stuff.
In both cases,
well, think about COVID and the COVID narratives.
Jimmy, you got some background coming back at us.
Yeah, it's not me. I think it's Andrew.
Oh, you mean Jimmy. Yeah. There you go.
But think about the COVID narrative.
Yeah.
And how misreported that was, and how just outright wrong the stuff that was coming out was. But people seized it and ran with it because it was a simple.
Why did we ever run with the numbers out of China that we knew were totally wrong? I mean, what?
Which numbers?
Well, I mean, the idea that. To this day, I think China has 85,000 people dying. What was it, probably 20 million?
My take on COVID was that when it hit, it was instantly recognized by the anti-Trump people, both Republican and Democrat, as a cudgel that could be used to beat the administration. And so anything that they could do to promote that was permissible and promoted. And if the Trump administration said this thing originated in China as a lab leak, the immediate response was no, it occurred naturally because the Trump people are trying to
That's what those people were trying to say. I mean,
right,
it occurred naturally. And I remember what was the disease before that.
You know, SARS.
Our people are pretty good, and the one that got out before it was like a week or two that they determined that it came through camels, right? That's how it got out.
Something like that, yes.
And all of a sudden, when these guys kept talking about the fish market and couldn't this, that, and the other thing, and they couldn't find it for 2 months, I'm sitting there going, wait a minute, this didn't come through animals, or they would have found it by now.
Well, and it originated in the city where they've got the bio lab.
Yeah.
The bioweapons lab. Yeah. Come on, guys.
Yeah, duh.
So Fauci and his whole cohort, and I'm going to let this go because I could talk forever on this, and Andrew and Wayne are right in the wings. I can see him. Fauci and his cohort used the anti-Trump animus, or the Trump animus, to cover up their own malfeasance and misfeasance on that program. And it just happened that their personal interests in disguising what had happened and where the virus came from happened to coincide with the interests of the mainstream press in attacking Trump. And those two things aligned perfectly. And you got all kinds of misleading narratives that were deliberately designed to mislead.
I'm not so sure it was everybody after Trump. I mean, because Fauci was dodging everything. I mean, it was a big mess. He inherited that group. I mean, I'm not blaming that on him. His response was pretty bad. So was Biden. So were all the governors, the Democrats and the Republicans.
Oh, I'm talking about the origin stuff. That all dovetailed. Anyway,
whatever.
Something to talk about next week if you want.
All right, we'll do that.
We'll see you guys. Have a terrific weekend and adios.
Okay, S&P futures up 48, Nasdaq futures up 624. Do we have our guys?
Yes, you do.
How are you,
and,
bud?
I'm happy to very good. I'm happy to report that the latest from the reflecting pool front is that the National Guard are threatening to arrest parents of kids who were seen splashing their hands into the water, or the green swamp or whatever you want to call that thing. So
the knife slice has gone from 100 yards to 200 yards to 300 yards or something.
300 yards. There was one reported 350. He mentioned, and now we know that before the water was put in, he had the beast. That's the name for the presidential limo, and an entire motorcade run across that sealant. And people pointed out that would have cracked it. So I think we found our culprit.
Wait a minute. They ran the cars through the reflecting.
Yes, he wanted to see what kind of job they did, and they had the presidential motorcade, including the beast, which it weighs a ton, and you know, the ambulance and all the other police all came through the reflecting pool, driving over that blue sealant, but. Now we got the military there protecting it. Some people call it Sealant Team 6.
You mean the knucklehead drove the car through there, wrecked the bottom, and is now blaming it on other people?
Yes. And then to make matters worse, they put hydrogen peroxide in there to kill the algae, and that actually helped peel this blue sealant paint off of the concrete. So... there you go. And in the process, they killed all the ducks.
Yeah, they killed. I saw they did kill. This is. Is it just me, or are we getting to the point here where this is? I mean, the stuff coming out of the White House is reaching. I don't even think the Republicans can handle it.
Well,
go ahead, Andy.
Well, here's an on the ground report, although. From maybe five or six blocks away, but illustrating your part of your conversation with Lou in the last segment about different perceptions of events as reported, I was meeting someone at the National Press Club for dinner, which is about seven blocks from this reflecting pool, and overhead were just astonishingly loud noises, like the worst thunder clap you ever heard. And then all over the place were National Guards people, and they're just walking around in trios, and you think, what the heck is going on here? And it turns out that there were fighter jets flying all over the city. And, you know, this massive infusion of National Guards people to do what? You know, to keep order? Well, as Wayne pointed out, they're partly there to arrest people who come by the reflecting pool. or to assist other people, park police, in arresting them. And then later that night, I get a thing from actually a relative about the great celebrations going on in Washington and how fabulous it's going to be because they have fighter planes over flying, and Trump's going to be given talks, and I'm thinking, well, this is two different views of reality here. On the one hand, I'm thinking, who's paying for all these National Guards people to do nothing but patrol around and waste time trying to help arrest people who want to look at the reflecting pool and flying over head? And other people think that's great. It's a celebration of America.
Yeah, it's, I mean, I don't know. I don't get the the whole thing is so bizarre to me. The more they talk about it, the crazier it gets. I mean, like, I listened to a guy yesterday. We went from a knife cutting through it from 50 yards to 200 to 300. Every time the guy talks, it gets up another 50 yards. I mean, don't even the people around him realize that this is getting kind of crazy?
Oh, yeah, they do, but they won't say anything. And,
but how far do you... How far... Here, I'll give you this question. I'm listening to Bessent a few times, who I absolutely can't stand the guy.
but that makes no difference.
But, you know, but I mean, it's at some point, when you act like such a buffoon, and I understand who he's protecting, when you act like such a buffoon, you go home, doesn't your wife or your daughter or your son say, Jesus, did you watch yourself? What's the matter with you?
I mean, in his case, it's his husband, which is kind of rich.
Yeah.
When we see all the anti-gay initiatives out of this administration, they seem to look the other way when it's one of their own.
Yeah, at some point you can't, you have to listen to yourself. I don't see how these guys are kind of doing this. I mean, I think the vice president is doing his best to try and break away, but that's kind of tough. I mean, some of the stuff is insane. That even the MAGA people are going to go, boy, that didn't sound right. I mean,
I would have loved to have been a fly on the wall that Senate luncheon, the Republican Senate luncheon, when apparently him and Bill Cassidy from Louisiana got into a shouting match.
What was that all about?
Trump at the very last minute just pulling a rug out from under the signing of this housing act. It was bipartisan. Both houses were involved with it, and they had the podium set up. They had the flags there. This was going to be this big. And then he said, no, and you didn't pass my SAVE Act, which isn't going to pass whatsoever. That's to make sure. Well, that's basically for him to take charge of every election in the country, which is unconstitutional. He said, well, I'm not going to sign that thing. He shows up for this luncheon, and apparently Cassidy was the only one that decided he was going to, because, you know, it was behind him getting defeated in his primary in Louisiana, so he had nothing to lose. And they got in a shouting match. But then last night, apparently, Cassidy wanted to make amends, so he voted to walk back the Senate resolution on pulling support for this war in Iran, which they had passed, and they walked it back. So this is a three ring circus without the ringmaster.
I don't see why this is going down this road. I mean, it's starting to get pretty crazy. Where the who's the Asian guy that was talking about some drug that they think?
Oh, that's Ted Lieu.
Where does he come from? That guy's he's pretty out there.
He's a former federal prosecutor.
And an Army JAG officer.
Yeah, and he kind of brings those talents or career experience And he says, look, we know from the drug manufacturer that they gave a 79-year-old well-connected person extraordinary access to a drug. Normally that means the person's in danger of dying. Who's this person? And so there's an implication that maybe he was trying to convey is that Trump used his power to get an experimental drug, and that he exerted not simply his influence, but that maybe he's seriously ill. The counter argument is that if it really were Trump, he wouldn't go through a lot of protocols, and he'd just make sure he got it. So I'm not sure.
Yeah, I don't know if I'd tar him with that brush, but
that's a credible scenario. But that's the background of what you mentioned.
Well, you know, in somewhat of a defense of the guy, which I don't, you know, I'm not big on, but it's he started so many fights in so many different directions that the pressure on the guy from people coming back at him has to be enormous. How do you keep track of the different?
I don't think he cares because he's been like this his entire life. If he's not in a crisis situation and lashing out at people, to him that's unnatural. He thrives on controversy, on fighting with people, on demeaning others. That's his like lifeblood, life force. And you know, if he weren't to do that, that experimental drug might be harmful if he ever stops doing what he has done since he, you know, was a young punk in school in New York.
Well, can anybody figure out between the people that got primaried out that now are at him in Congress, the Republicans he tossed out don't like him very much, and he's got 6 months to put up with them, right?
Yeah.
I mean, what's your count? At the end of the day, with all this redistricting and all this stuff, I'm trying to keep track of it, but then again, I got you guys. What's the count? Who's gained? The Democrats or Republicans? Or is anybody? We're right back where we started from after all this time and money.
Well, there's a slight... there's an advantage, according to normal calculations, that the Republicans have for a lot of this. A lot of that advantage comes from favorable court decisions, though. And so that's a wild card, because until the court decisions come out, you don't know what it's going to be. But another wild card is just like any TV show or other spectacle, at some point, people have had enough. And if you think about, you know, let's say popular entertainment, and Wayne used to do a Sunday column called Hollywood Politrivia, which was about lessons from old TV and movie shows applied to current politics. But applying that to here, there were very popular shows that some of your older listeners might recall, like the Beverly Hillbillies and so forth, that people looked on as classics, but at some point, it's over, you know, and people move on. And that may be applicable to this kind of election calculus that you brought up a moment ago. And to close the loop on it, or what I was going to suggest, is that there's a temporary advantage to Republicans now from all the gerrymandering, aided by the court decisions that, you know, you look at it, and it's mostly Trump-appointed judges that have helped. But the wild card is at some point, people just say, all right, I've seen the show, I'm ready for something different. And you have situations in Ohio, Iowa, and elsewhere where nobody would think that the Republican have any danger in the Senate race. And yet if you start looking at the polls now, you say, wait a second, they're behind or even, and it's still 5 months to go.
It's I have the advantage of having you guys and all the other guys that are on the show. I can't get my hands around this. What is it? Plus, these seems like they're doing this stuff in districts that kind of the population is shifting anyway. It might work this time, but it might totally backfire next time. Or where am I wrong? It just seems weird.
Oh, I think you're right. The idea behind the Texas gerrymandering by the Republicans was to eliminate some safe Democratic districts and then create five Republican safe districts. But what they did in Texas is they figured, based on the 2024 election, where a lot of Hispanics voted for the Republicans and Trump, that they were figuring, well, they're still going to vote for us.
I wouldn't take that bet.
Yeah, no. Yeah, right. Yeah, what's Kalshi's odds on that right now? They didn't figure what ICE was going to start doing, starting to, grab people anyway. The Republican polling amongst Hispanics is way down. So by putting these Hispanics in these sort of white suburban districts to make them safe, now they're looking at, Jesus, they could lose all five of them, the ones that were supposed to be now safe Republican districts. So and I think you've got that situation in a couple of other states where they've gerrymandered, including here in Florida. The Cuban population here was always considered very safe Republican, anti-communist and all this business. But because they have now deported some Cuban immigrants to this country, the Republicans are losing a lot of support in Miami-Dade and other South Florida cities. And there could be a rout of the Republicans there, too. So I would say right now, it's not looking good for the Republicans, and they're all running for cover. They were hoping to tout this housing bill to, lower the cost of housing for people, but Trump sabotaged it at the last minute.
I guess it's a question I can only ask you guys. Who is in charge of the minutiae? I mean, if I have a general attitude that I don't like any immigrants, okay, well, that's the general attitude, obviously, especially if they're not white. I mean, there's no... I'm sure people are going to say, "Oh, they don't care as long as they're, as long as they're, they get here legitimately." Well, they just raised the cost of citizenship, from $600 to $1,200 yesterday or something, or 2 days before. I mean, but basically, we don't want anybody who's not white. I mean, it appears to me. So, but now when you get down to, if I pontificate that from the Oval Office, the new gold office, who follows it down to the spot where the Iranian soccer team's got to be out of here in 2 hours after the game or something? I mean, who runs this down to the minutia?
I think it's the king of the cruelty and meanness. I think it's Stephen Miller.
How many people work for him? Does he come up sit there all day long for 20 hours coming up with this stuff, or does he have
when he's not pulling the wings off of butterflies? That's what he's doing, I think. He's got a staff of like-minded people, but it all goes back to him. Now others have tried to emulate him, and there's all kinds of rumors that he's on his way out. Well, there were those rumors in the first Trump administration. They were not, none of them were true. And this guy is the king of cruelty, and he's obviously a white supremacist.
Well, his family says that. It's not just you saying it.
His rabbi says it back in Santa Monica, California. I mean, it's unbelievable.
Here's how it can get implemented. Obviously, he and his staff don't have time to direct individual cases, but what happens when you win you issue an order that immigration judges, for example, work at the pleasure of the president, and while it's being litigated, if you're an immigration judge, you think, well, gee, I'm probably going to lose my job if I don't make these rulings in favor of the government. And the same thing with prosecutors, and maybe I'll just mention it as an overview, but right in Chicago, there are some fascinating cases being examined or being revealed in the immigration world, where a federal judge is looking at the demanding the grand jury transcripts of protesters, including the congressional candidate up in the Skokie area who lost, but she was arrested, and it's becoming clear that she was arrested not so much for what she did at the Broadview Detention Center, but because they thought, well, she's a Democrat, she's running for Congress, let's indict her. And there's normally grand jury activity is secret, but the judge is just drilling down on this, saying, I want to see the transcripts. And then it turns out, or maybe as a last bit, I was just going to give an overview, but this is significant. When the judge demanded the transcripts, part of it was redacted, and the attorneys and the judge ultimately got the unredacted part. And it turns out to be a cover-up, because the part that they redacted look like very clear ethical violations by the prosecutors to try to ramrod indictments. And all of this takes time to percolate to the top, but it all illustrates, I think, an answer to your question. How does this happen? Well, it happens because everybody who's working for the federal government thinks we have to do what Stephen Miller wants, with some exceptions, and some of the exceptions are judges, maybe some individual prosecutors who say, well, I don't want to be part of this case, even if I get fired. But others go along with it. So that's how it happens, I think.
Did you ever think that, I hearken back to we were doing the history of one of our history classes, Nazi Germany, right? And one of the guys in class said that, I remember it was the brother Copper, Maris' brother. He said, well, that could never happen here. And he said, don't kid yourself, it can happen anywhere. Once things start to go down a certain road where everybody has to be, you're either in or you're out, and if it gets, it becomes, I mean, I think that, you know, there have always been, hey, let's face it, there's always people that are racist, black and white, right? There's always people that don't like anybody, black and white. There's always people that, the reason why you join a country club, because you don't want anybody else in the place except you and other people like you. That's why country clubs exist, right? I mean, to not realize that this is, I guess, a bad part of human nature, but it is somehow part of new human nature. People don't necessarily like people that are different, and for whatever reason. I mean, we were in we were in a big shindig in Frankfurt, and we, you know, it was a big outdoor fair, and boy, they do it up right there. I mean, the streets all perfectly cobblestones here out there, and of course the beers, they would never give you a beer in a paper cup in Germany, right? And but there isn't a soul there that isn't white, that isn't anything. And I'd only been there for a few days. All of a sudden, these two gypsies walk by, and he's looking at him. You almost recoiled by saying, who are they and what are they doing here? And it was only after being there a couple of days. I mean, here in Chicago, you walk down the street, this guy's black, this guy's Chinese. You don't think anything of it. We're all just Americans. I mean, that's the way I look at it. But other places don't necessarily, they never lose that. But you can play, and you can either play on people's, you know, what did Freud say? You're going to play on the ego or the id, right? We have been, Trump is spectacular at playing at the id, the bad part of everybody. And I don't know if you guys were listening the other day, but I know when I go off on my economic rants, you guys, you know, start twirling your finger around the ear like this guy's nuts. But just in the last 6 years, I won't go back to God knows when, 2000, I think a lot of this really started. Since January 2020 to April 2026, the money supply is up 48%. Now, Hal and other people on here that are economists will say that probably means your inflation is up 40 to 45. Okay? He'd say probably the whole 48, but I'm going to say there's a little bit of population growth, and there's a little bit of maybe, you know, people being more efficiency or something like that. But the admitted to CPI in that range is 28%. So it's, you know, it's 60% of what the real number is probably. And yet your average hourly wage is only up 21%. So I think that economic harm, when people have some sort of prejudice that maybe they don't even think they have until somebody points it out to them. I think when you have economic harm and all of a sudden the finger pointing is the reason why you're not doing so hot is because this person is taking your money. Where it, you know, is to the Hispanic population, is the message was the immigrants, they're getting their citizen right way and you're not getting yours. No, by the way, they're taking your jobs and they're getting money that was meant for you. That was a very strong, very negative statement. And by the way, it worked, right? And the same thing, there's people that I know here will say that the Chicago spent, you know, several billion dollars on the immigrants. There were 55,000 people here, and in 6 months, most of them had a job. I mean, granted, it wasn't the best thing in the world, but do we really, I mean, did the number one, do we really spend $350,000 on each person? I don't think so. Doesn't mean somebody didn't get it, but it wasn't them. But if that's the message, reason why Chicago's in bad shape is we got these 55,000 people don't belong here. There's 6 million people in this area, for God's sake. 55,000, that's the same to go to a Sox game. I mean, really? I mean, but all of a sudden, if you're hurting economically, you're looking to find, you know, a reason for, you know, why are you where you are. It's not your fault. It's somebody else's fault. God, the reason why you're not getting a job is this guy's stealing it from you. You know, the reason why your son, who's 35 years old, is down on the computer looking at God knows what all day is because the Mexican guys are hanging out in the Home Depot taking those jobs from him. Well, why isn't he in the Home Depot? Well, he doesn't want to work like that. So, I mean, but am I right or wrong that there's always this undercurrent, and whenever things get bad, things poke through. I mean, look what was going on in the Depression. People think that everybody just stood around here loving the American way and didn't think that maybe we should change governmental systems. For God's sake, the fascists had stuff here. The communists
The communists were strong back then,
yeah,
too.
And people sit there and go, this isn't working so hot. Maybe one of these other ways is better. I don't know that it was necessarily treason. It was maybe even curiosity, right? Because 1932, things weren't so good, were they?
No, and the interesting thing is, you know, we have faced these close calls with totalitarian rule before, and there were a lot of people during the Depression who were curious about the communists and went to their meetings. But after World War II, they were all hauled before Congress as part of the Red Scare and the McCarthy hearings. You never saw any of those fascist German-American Bundists, the Hitler, pro-Hitler, pro-Mussolini people. They weren't hauled before any of the committees after the war. And there was good reason to haul them, because some of them were spying on behalf of the Axis powers.
Well, I mean, we got to go to break here, but I'll lob this one at you, maybe chew on during break. I saw this thing on YouTube, and it was a bunch of these older German guys. But it had to be, I don't think they're alive now, but they were, had to be, and it was an interview done, I'm going to say 15 years ago, when they were old and alive. He said, if you looked at, he was not a good guy. He hated everybody. But if you look at the from 1932 on, he said, if Hitler would have dropped dead the night before he invaded Poland, he probably would have gone down as the greatest economic leader of the 20th century. Because they came out of that, they stole money from people to do it. They came out of the Depression a lot faster than anybody else.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, S&P futures up 61, NASDAQ futures up 689. Andrew and Wayne, I think, both have 5,000 shares of Micron they bought on the close last night, so they're happy as hell. It's up $185. You guys hit it again. You must have intercepted one of the messages from the White House or something. We'll be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI ProDirect can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI ProDirect. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com, PTIProDirect.com.
What are you going to do with your old car? You can try selling it, you could junk it, or you can donate it to Heritage for the Blind. Your car will be towed away for free, and your donation is tax deductible. Just call 1-800-639-8620. Heritage for the Blind accepts cars, vans, trucks, and boats. It doesn't matter if your vehicle runs or not, it'll be towed away for free, and you'll be supporting those that need help. Heritage for the Blind is a nonprofit organization that helps the visually impaired live fuller lives. Call right now to donate your car. And as a special thank you for calling, you'll receive a free 3-day vacation voucher to many exciting locations. Call Heritage for the Blind right now. Call 1-800-639-8620. Donating is easy, and your vehicle is towed away for free. Plus, you'll get a free vacation voucher. Call now, 1-800-639-8620. That's 1-800-639-8620.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Listen, are you a 50-year-old person looking for term life insurance? Then you need to talk to Bob. Bob specializes in helping people find $1 million or more of term life insurance for a couple of $100 a month. Look, you need to know there's a price war in the term life insurance business, and you may be paying too much. Call Bob, and he'll shop and see how much money he can save you. Look, this could be the last term life insurance policy you ever have. Your rates are guaranteed for the next 20 years. That's right, guaranteed level rates for the next 20 years. And if you're a smoker or your health is not perfect, Bob has great rates for you too. So for $1 million of term life insurance coverage for a couple of $100 a month, call Bob right now. 800-989-1415. 800-989-1415. 800-989-1415.
Stocks. Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here. Right now. Right here. Right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Allen, Jimmy on the board. S&P futures up 60, NASDAQ futures up 685. We just had the big inflation number come out here, and let me get the number. It's the core PCE is 0.5. The year over year is 4.1, which I think is, well, actually, no, it's 4.1, which is as high as it's been. Personal income is up 0.7%. Which I guess is pretty good, considering it was supposed to be 0.4. But it's hard for me to even report on this number because nobody has any detail on it. It's the Fed's preferred report because nobody can figure it out. Which is core inflation rate hit 3.4% in May, highest since October. And this is year over year, which doesn't do anybody any good because you want something that's more current. That's my opinion, but that's. Anyway, it's my opinion. S&P futures up 59, NASDAQ futures up 674. The number didn't really move the market at all. Obviously, we're up because Micron's up $188. It's 18% as the forecast of revenue. They're saying that they're going to maintain their revenue growth all the way through 2027, which kind of conflicts with what Carl's saying. The prices are already coming down a little bit yesterday. Talk to Carl tomorrow about that. We'll see who's... hope he didn't short Micron. Over in Asia... Nikkei up 3,100. It's 4.5%. They've been down. Now they're up. Hang Seng down 335, which is kind of weird, 1.4%. Shanghai up 9.2%, so uneven over there. But Japan is clearly way up, and we know they're pouring money into the system over there. They're getting inflation. People don't want it, but boy, the banks and the government are whole for sure because they own a lot of the stock. DAX up 193.8%. FTSE up 84.8%. CAC up 50.6%, so generally up over in Europe as well. 10-year rate down from the 4.5 the other day, down to 0.02 to 4.37. We've got oil, which again is causing a lot of the good stuff, down 51 cents, 69.83, so under $70. RBOB down to 290, so your gas should be somewhere in the mid to 350 to 4, depending on what your taxes are. A lot better than the 450 to 5. Gold up $16, first rally in a while, 4,025. Silver's down a dime. 57.98. The reason why the gold and silver have been down is that the dollar has been so strong. It's at 113.5 in the euro. I mean, it was 117 3 weeks ago. British pound, 131.71. It was over 135. Crypto, which was taking a huge bath, actually is back over 60,000, 61.275. Under 60, that's a problem for not the people who own it, but also for this micro strategies, which I think is bouncing a little bit today. It's still 95.94. It was down like 11 yesterday. It's back a $1.80. That company's got a lot of leverage on this crypto, and it's kind of making me nervous. Jimmy, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
Okay, and traffic on the inbound, 23 minutes. Inbound Heath is 38 minutes. Inbound Eisenhower is 30 minutes. The inbound Dan Ryan is 24. In weather in Chicago, it is a high of, it is 65 degrees with a high of 78. It will be mostly sunny today. In Phoenix, it is going to be hot. It is 88 right now with a high of 109. In sports, we have the final day of the World Cup of the first round. Now the elimination round will begin. Also, Cubs win, Sox lose. Back to you, Chief.
Interesting move. It hasn't really moved a Micron here. This number, like I said, is PC. Everybody's eagerly watching it because supposedly the Fed's watching it. But you know, like I said, you can't dig into the details. So, what good is it, guys? If you don't know where it's coming from. these numbers, I don't know how good they are. What do you think? I mean, is it, we at least used to be able to count on the numbers, I think, and now I'm not so sure we can.
Well, I just shudder to think what they're doing at the Bureau of Labor Statistics. I had a friend who was very instrumental in coming up with those unemployment stats. He said they guarded that. This is back under W. Bush, and they guarded those like the gold in Fort Knox. And he was concerned back then that there was that they were getting a little loosey-goosey with the protection of those numbers before their official announcement. And I just shudder to think what's going on there now.
You remember who was Reagan's Secretary of Treasury? Was it Schultz?
Reagan was James. It was James Baker, I think, for a while.
But it was Schultz was that, and then he was Secretary of State too, right?
Yes, Schultz was Secretary of State, right?
One morning, there I was minding my own business as usual, driving to the South Side to take my mom to breakfast, and it was one of these 7 o'clock in the morning, nobody ever listens to him show, and it was Schultz on there, and he'd just become Secretary of the Treasury. And the guy's asking him, like, real questions, and Schultz is actually answering them. You know, imagine that. And he says to him, Secretary, what is the story with when a number comes out? Who has access to the number before it hits the tape in those days? Talk about showing my age. And he says, you know, funny you should mention that. When I got this job, I asked the same question. And I get, because obviously, you know, you can't have President Reagan walk into the helicopter and say, what do you think of the labor numbers? And him going, what labor numbers?
I mean, he could never hear anybody anyway.
Well, but either way, there's a few people you kind of want to know. And don't they actually give a bunch of reporters, they put them in a room with the cell phones outside and they give them the numbers like 5 minutes before so they can actually kind of get their story together. So when it breaks, they actually have something to say. Isn't there a group that does that?
Yeah, that may be past protocol, especially for the, you know, papers like the Wall Street Journal and Investor's Business Daily and places like that.
Well, anyway, Schultz says, I get this list of all these people. And I go, who are all these people and what are they doing on this list? And the guy says, well, so what'd you do? He goes, well, I tried to get rid of them. It became the toughest thing I did in politics, so I gave up. I remember it to this day. It had to be 40 years ago, for God's sake. I remember it to this day, him saying that. And he goes, I gave up. It was the toughest thing I ever did, getting a name off that list.
Yeah. Hey, we forgot to lament the passing at 100 years old of Alan Greenspan.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm sorry, I just could not get irrationally exuberant over that news.
Well, I mean, the thing of it is, I didn't think he was near death. If you would have asked me how old he was, I would have said 85. But now I realize
he was 100, right?
He was 100, yeah. I mean,
him and Kissinger, what was their secret? The mind boggles.
Well, Rockefeller, too.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, what's he, who was the young baby married when he was secretary or a Fed chair?
Well, it was his second wife.
Yeah, but she was like 40 years younger, wasn't she?
Andrea Mitchell, chief Washington correspondent of NBC News.
Is she still with us?
Yeah.
Well, she retired.
Yeah. She started falling asleep on the air, so I guess somebody must have figured out, hey, maybe she should retire.
What do you mean? She could run for president. Hey, I have to... I have to ask. I mean, it's...
Now, that's funny.
That's funny. You didn't get the laugh it deserved.
Somewhere along the line, the Democrats have been tarred with the brush, and I'll say it. They're the party of illegal immigrants, blacks, and gays, right? I mean, that's what they've been tarred with, and all they want to do is take your money. And some of that's true. I mean, there is some truth to it. That's why... You know, all stories, you know, all bad stories start with a grain of truth, right? And the Republicans now have become the minority sector that's in charge is, you know, the 15% on the far right, which is, how does either party, because the Republicans, I think, are starting to worry about this, not only in November, but certainly 2 years from now, when is somebody going to step up to the Democrat plate and say, guys, we got to go back to being the party where maybe of the working class and everybody, but it's not just this group. We're a party for everybody. And you know, where do we get another guy, you know, slightly to the left of center? And where do the Republicans start to attract the people that they're not losing by the day? I think. I mean, when is one of these people, I don't care what color, what gender they're, when is somebody going to stand up and say enough? I don't see either person on either side. The only guy who's making some sense, the only guy who's making some sense is one senator, but he's, what, 80 years old? Stonewall, or what's his name? The guy with the gray hair, the Democratic senator from Virginia or someplace. He's actually been showing himself pretty well interviewing these people, but he's up there. He's not going to run.
Somebody likened the progressives, Democratic Socialists, whatever you call them, and Democratic Party, they've likened it to the Tea Party of the left. Saying, ignore them at your own peril.
Wait, they got no chance of winning.
Well, here's what I want to say is, your question implies a nationwide solution, and I would just say it may be that the solution is already happening, but on a local level. What I mean is, the candidates who are winning primaries for the Democrats in South Carolina, Ohio, Mississippi, and elsewhere, they're kind of matching their region to many extent. And so are the ones who just won primaries in New York City, the Democratic Socialists, who won three races this week. And people want to nationalize it and say, oh, so the Democrats are now Democratic Socialists, like the people who won in the Brooklyn. Well, not necessarily, because at the same time, you had the centrists won the governorships of Virginia and New Jersey last November. And if you look at the candidates who are winning these primaries, as I mentioned, in South Carolina, you know, they're physicians, they're military veterans, and they match the region. It's called winning the election in your locality, and it's not a nationwide solution. And if we try to jump ahead to who's the presidential candidate, that's putting the cart before the horse, because people got to win and prove themselves locally before they enter any reasonable discussion of a presidency. And what this SAVE Act that Trump had the tantrum is, he wants to nationalize voting databases so that he can use the Postal Service and the FBI and so forth to go into voter registration and say, oh, these people in this state, they're not eligible to vote or whatever. And so,
which would be everybody registered as a Democrat.
Yeah, and to match it with Social Security records and voting, and disallow mail-in voting based on this master voting list. By the way, a federal appeals court just ruled against that in one of the circuits yesterday. We want a nationwide solution. We want to talk about presidential candidates and general patterns, but it's evolving as well.
Well, I mean, I'm way out in left field on this. That's why it's up to you guys to drag me back. And you guys have done this to me, people on this show, and it's been my lifetime of basically dicking around with economics because I love it. And it's also part of what I do for people. I mean, they pay me to worry, right? and to watch this stuff. Well, they're up operating on people and saving people. I watch their stuff. I mean, that's what I do. So the this whole concept, all these people you talk about, I'm not saying they're dumb, they're not anything. I don't think any of these people belong on this show. I mean, the problems we have, what I'm talking about, are so deep in terms of how are we going to figure out a way to have a medical community that only sucks up 15% of the national debt instead of, or the national spending instead of 21, that actually cures some people and actually cares for some people. Yeah. I mean, this is a huge problem. How do we stop charging old people $15 for a pill that costs 15 cents to make? I'm like AOC's new boyfriend, right? I probably get two emails from her a day. For God's sake, she sounds just like Trump. Every single one of them is what an amazing thing it was that she won. What a miracle. She sounds like Trump beating Hillary. I mean, I've yet to see an idea the lady's flown at me, and I have to have had 500 emails. I mean, she's probably a great lady. Her heart's probably in the right place. To me, at least,
she used to be a bartender,
which is fine with me. But I mean, it's
me too.
but at some point, you have to have some concept. What are we going to do? Are we going to change patent laws as it regards medical stuff? What are we going to do about the fact that inflation is to the moon? What are we going to do about? Are we going to cut back the money supply? Are we going to do something that might cause an overheated market to go down with all the abuse that's going to cause you? I mean, what is our plan here? And I don't see any one of these people at entry level. Doesn't make them bad. They're young. They're that's what they're supposed to be doing. But I don't see anybody that I see here is, I'll use the term a Solomon, that actually, you know, I don't see Gavin Newsom having any of these kind of knowledge.
Oh, right.
I mean, I don't see Jay Pritzker. I mean, no. Maybe he does. I should. I mean, Trump, give me a break. I wouldn't have him. You know, I mean, what are we talking about? You know. So, I mean, the stuff that really has to happen, and the stuff I was telling you guys about inflation versus income versus whatever, these are 25-year problems where people are in debt to their eyeball. The first quarter of this year, if I sent it to you guys, $47 billion in debt was taken out on equity and loans for people. It's a new record. I mean, the margin debt in the stock market is at a record high. I mean, what are we doing? I don't think any of these people could even sit here and have this conversation with us, could they?
Oh, I doubt it. As a matter of fact, you were mentioning the Republicans and who they have. Possibly we hear about, you know, Rubio and Vance. Apparently, former New Jersey Governor Chris Christie's getting ready to announce he's going for the Republican nomination in 28. It's been pointed out that, look, he's just as much a bully as Donald Trump, but he's a smart bully, unlike Donald Trump. So now I don't think he's going to go anywhere in the Republican Party because, first of all, Trump hates him for a lot of reasons. He actually was when he was a prosecutor, U.S. attorney in New Jersey, put Jared Kushner's father in prison for bribery and a whole host of other crimes. And of course, this guy's now Trump's ambassador in France.
And why don't you amplify, Wayne, on what the crimes were and what Kushner's doing in France that is horrifying and angering the French people?
Kushner's father is basically ignoring the French government and going directly to, like, right-wing media and other operations there, saying, look, the French government, Macron, is an anti-Semite, and France is an anti-Semitic country. They don't like Israel. And that's really not what a U.S. ambassador is supposed to do. But he's always been a dirtbag guy. One of the things Christie got him on is he hired a hooker to set up his own brother-in-law in a motel where the motel room was had video cameras that Kushner's father had placed there.
And he wanted to pressure his brother-in-law on a deal by blackmailing him.
Well, do you, I mean, I
was the prosecutor as U.S. attorney Greater Jersey.
Well, I assume you guys are very keen on the similarity between the attitude here. If you don't like Trump's policy, you're anti-American.
Yes.
And if you don't like Netanyahu killing people every damn day, you're somehow you're anti-Semitic. I'm not. I'm not anti-Semitic at all. But I hope there's a separate room in hell for that guy.
Yeah, and of course this is being used in New York City against Mamdani, who's like a campaign number one campaign assistant, just won one of those primaries, beating a fairly centrist Democrat. It's there's a lot of these charges flying about that it's red meat for certain people, but I think you're right. You're onto something. I think people are getting tired of it.
Well, it's funny. What do you guys? I think one of the we get all kinds of people assassinated all the time, right? Unfortunately, when I say all the time, I think assassination of Kennedy was a huge deal. Although I did read something that the man was so sick he wouldn't have made it another couple of years anyway with his disease, but you know, who knows about
Addison's
that.
Yeah, Addison's disease.
But I wonder if the guy who got shot in Israel, what was his name?
Yitzhak Rabin, prime minister.
I think that guy getting killed, he was very moderate, very intelligent.
Yeah.
I think that was a serious history changer for this world.
Here's a story. I was his head of Mossad, Shabtai Shavit. I was in his car in Tel Aviv, and he said, "I got to take you to the memorial where the prime minister was shot. It's like an eternal flame." And he said, "Look, if you don't leave Israel with any other information, know this: the guy that did that was a right wing Jewish guy, an extreme a Zionist and a close ally of Benjamin Netanyahu."
It's unreal. Hey guys,
it was to me, I'll tell you.
As usual, good stuff. Next week will be the last show of the week because we're off Friday. When am I going to meet you? I got to see you guys. I'm going to have to go to Washington or something. But maybe, but then I'll get arrested. All right, guys, you take care of yourself. Jimmy, good job. SP Futures up 60. NASDAQ Futures up 700. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks. All right, so we have a problem.
That's all, folks.